Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Hello and welcome along to The Worst Idea of All Time, a podcast from which Tim Bett and myself, Guy Montgomery, watch and review Sex and the City, the movie, 52 times as quickly as we can with one another. And today we are joined by the wonderful Mitra Johari. Mitra, how are you?
I'm great. I was better before I came here. Now I'm worse, but it's great to be with Guy. It's great to talk to Tim.
Yeah. I'm sorry that we keep doing this to such cool people. it's not a great way to make friends and influence people. It's like, hey, you want to come on our podcast? We're going to treat you like shit first, but then we'll talk about it.
How are you going, Tim?
Mate, do you know how I'm doing? I'm hungover, and I didn't formally worry about my drinking, but I feel like I've said that sentence so many times in this season of the podcast that I'm communicating with you hungover that I'm like, I must drink a lot more than I thought I did, because I thought I was getting a lot more sober as I aged, but apparently not.
Well, the podcast is an interesting litmus test. Do you think there's a relationship between abusing alcohol and having to do this project?
You know what, Guy? There could be a relationship betwixt the two, for sure.
I mean, I will drink tonight.
What? Describe the sitch. Mitra, how, just like paint a picture for me in terms of what the setup was for you guys. Did you watch this on a laptop or a TV, or what's happening over there?
We watched it on a TV. And I will say, Guy spiced up the viewing experience by adding in songs that were not part of the movie.
Like he was singing them or just playing them on something?
No, he would pull up a song on Spotify, but it was all coming out of the same speaker, so it would seem like the song was playing in the movie.
That's really cool. what additional soundtrack did you add, Guy, for this watch?
The best one.
Yeah. It was, well, I've always wanted to do it because when Carrie is reading the book to Lily, or is it Rose? Who's the adopted daughter?
Rose. No, Lily.
Lily.
Yeah. She's reading Cinderella. She goes, you know, this is all just a fairy tale, right? It's not real. And of course, Lily doesn't give a fuck. She's a child, and she says,
correct.
Again, and then Carrie says, another one bites the dust.
And you put on, you know, Guy. You put on Queen.
Yeah, and then so as soon as she says it, it just kicks him with it.
But he did it perfectly, so I really thought that it was part of the movie. I was like, that's so
excellent.
Funny. And then Guy immediately revealed what happened. But
Guy can't play his. He can't play his gags over a long term because he wants to claim that credit too quickly. It's like, no, it was me. I'm the genius.
All laughs.
You got to slow your roll, friend.
Yeah, all laughs must be immediately and correctly attributed at all times. But then I took inspiration from that, and I think I had another couple of cracks at it.
Miss New Booty played at one point. There was another, but there was one that I didn't recognize.
Miss New Booty plays when Carrie and Jennifer Hudson are talking at the bar, and Carrie goes on one of her fucking, you know, frustratingly wordy quips where she goes, I may not send texts, I may not receive texts, but the subtext of that text is Bute. Bute, 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 rocking everywhere.
I wish that movie could be fun.
Yeah, and then the other one was it didn't play because Mitra didn't know the song. But whenever Miranda steps up and wades through those balloon strings, she says, No, Carrie does, and Miranda goes, Carrie, please don't go. I put on Baby, Please Don't Go by the band Them, Van Morrison's band from his teenage years.
How's that go?
The intro is really iconic. It's a blues cover. Anyhow,
could you sing the chorus for me?
I can, but for the record, it did not work in the screening. I cannot imagine how it's going to work as revived for this audio recording.
There's only one way to find out.
Baby, please don't go. Baby, please don't go.
Oh, I do know
this. Baby, please don't go down New Orleans.
We didn't get to that part. It was just the intro.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. But, however, I stand by the idea. Had you known the intro, you would have known what it represented, which was the line, Baby, please don't go. I mean, it was a big ask.
Now, look, Mitra, you're a professional TV writer and you work in film as well. What do you say to the idea that we should start soundtracking films like you get one take and a Spotify playlist and just whatever, you know, you're really locked into that. It's like a live set from a DJ, but then it becomes part of the movie.
That works for me. Well, also because they do that thing where like they'll show a movie and there will be an orchestra on stage playing the soundtrack. So I sort of did a home version of that, but not the actual soundtrack of the movie.
Yeah, he's a regular Hans Zimmer guy, that's for sure.
Well, it's that thing where like Pink Floyd matches up with The Wizard of Oz, except for Guy played Queen during Sex and the City, the movie.
For the record, Mitra as well also matches up with Paul Blart Mall Cop 2, Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh my God.
It's like a 1-to-1 perfect, although you got to play it 1.5 times. It's a 1.5-to-1 perfect match, as the old saying goes.
Oh, perfect.
I think I like the idea, Tim, of scoring movies live using whatever means you have. But I would like to say I wouldn't have been able to do such a fantastic job had this not been the 18th screening of Sex and the City. I imagine waiting in for the first time.
True.
There's a lot more guesswork. You don't quite know what goes where.
Wow, and can I just say, absolutely bone-chilling experience watching guys say all the lines before the actors said them.
Yeah, you can say that because that is bone-chilling. I don't like what this is doing to us, my man.
Deeply devastating experience, top to bottom.
I'm so sorry. It was really nice watching it with you, Mitra, because it's a really good tell, you know, because once you're in this deep, it's really hard to know what's good, what's not. I mean, you got a vague handle, but lines are starting to blur in terms of what's actually a good bit of filmmaking and like what's something you've just gravitated to and decided to warm to and enjoy. And I described it because you took a real shining quite quickly to Cynthia Nixon's performance.
Yes.
And also her relationship, Miranda's relationship with Steve.
In the beginning, yes.
But like, it was amazing. So it's like when you're at a bad live gig and you're watching a really bad show and then someone comes on stage who's good and the entire tone of the room changed. Like you lean forward on your body and you're on your knees like, oh my gosh, like I'm invested in this.
I was ready. I was excited whenever we got a little taste.
And then to the point you were devastated, you called that something would crumble in their relationship and you were heartbroken.
I was really upset. I'm rooting for them.
Yeah.
Is this the first time that you've seen it?
Sex and the City? Yeah. I've never seen any Sex and the City.
Holy smokos. That's big. So this is your introduction to the franchise. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, well,
this is not how it's supposed to be viewed.
They gave us a 90-minute PowerPoint presentation in the beginning of the movie explaining what all the characters are like and everything that's ever happened to them. So it's
fine.
It
was literally for you. That was for specifically Mitra.
You guys made that.
Yeah.
I made that
when we first watched it, it just went straight into the movie, and we were like, "Well, hold on a minute."
I took little notes throughout the movie, and I wrote opening sequence equals ugly PowerPoint and assault.
Assault.
It was
firm but fair words.
Thank you. I'm being objective. I also the first thing that I wrote before anything else was ugly clothes. And man, oh man, they just were absolutely relentless with the ugly clothes.
Don't you think though that isn't it one of those things where being on the cusp of fashion puts you at danger of, like, as soon as 6 months have passed after the movie comes out, you look ridiculous? Is that fashion?
What was so weird about that is, like, I know that Sex and the City is known for being, like, fashion, slay, slay, slay. And I was watching, I was like, there's no way that, like, this ugly silk dress with huge, ugly belt in ugly color was fashion.
At the time.
Yeah.
Ever.
This is the first time I really honed in on it, but there was a fashion item that just absolutely perplexed me, and I've written it down in my extensive notes I took this time. Mitra, last episode, I had quite a distracted watch, and I felt bad about it, so this one I really fucking zoned in on. The scene where Big is chopping the tomatoes, they're in the kitchen, they're talking about the apartment.
She's husking corn.
She's husking corn. That is the verb. And she's wearing this crazy necklace, which...
ugly chunk necklace.
Yeah, it's like a broken clock or something. It's really weird. It's like a... I don't know how to describe it. I took a screenshot of it. I'd send it to you guys, but I think in the interest of this being an audio podcast, it's probably more useful if I describe it for you and everyone else. It's what the fuck is it?
Can I
it's
just
like
quickly
a big
say,
padlock.
Tim, it's nice to know you took a screenshot. Really nice.
it exists. No, do you know what it is? It looks like a little saucer, like a little saucer for milk that's attached to a padlock that's on a really horrible chain. And then someone's put like a metal eye in the middle of, I'm sending you the picture, guys. I'm not doing a great job on this.
No, you are. Like, it sounds ugly, which I know it will be.
It just didn't make any goddamn sense to me. Because it's like, at what point in time was this a good idea? But anyway, did you have other fashion critiques there, Mitra?
Yes. I'm going to just scroll through and read out all my fashion thoughts. So we got ugly clothes, and that's for the whole movie. Shortly after the opening,
that note as relevant now as it was when it was written down, but 2.5 hours ago.
Yeah, I feel it so much more strongly than I do. Let's see. This doesn't just go for fashion, but I wrote void of taste, absolute vacuum.
Jesus Christ, that's damning.
I wrote ugly hat party in parentheses auction. Pearls to bed ? But smell the old book. And that was the scene with Big where she's wearing the hideous silk purple cami, gray underwear, and pearls. And then they smell a book together. Ha ha ha.
Weirdly, I don't mind the gray.
I mean, the gray.
I know exactly. I know, the moment you're talking about. And I don't mind the gray. Everything else is pretty yuck. Yeah, the pearls at night, you're right. Is that a thing?
No, it's stressful.
The gray underwear, most normal thing about that. But why with the silk cami? Ugly purple. Let's see. Really made myself laugh because I wrote Adam Maraschino when it's the wedding planner, because I can't remember his real name. So in my mind, I went back and forth between Adam and Andy Maraschino. not fashion, but that one, gotta get that in.
That's
there.
Our friend Anthony, who I've over the course of 18 watches warmed to.
Yeah,
I fucking hate him.
Yeah, Mitra's on your team. She did not care for the guy at all.
I'm just what's the like. We're doing we're just seeing the two gay characters fall, like the only whatever.
They're the only gay men in New York.
We've got to make them kiss like a couple of Barbie dolls smushed together by a 6-year-old girl.
New York
we've
is
got to ram them down each other's throats.
You know, it is scant with gay men. Yeah. There are two, not just in the movie, but in the wider universe of the show.
Hey, I'd love to meet one.
Yeah, wouldn't we all?
And then I just wrote pube moment, but I think I actually like that now in retrospect, because at least it made me laugh.
This is when the gals are sitting around in Mexico, and it's the scene where Samantha calls out Miranda for having a bit of bush going on.
Yeah, like, I'm, you know what? Great. Let's see Bush.
Samantha is, she's got one speed and it's full speed.
Yes.
Everyone's on blast. She's a doer, which I like because there's not a lot of doing in this movie. There's a lot of sitting around.
Samantha's a great friend. Samantha, like, makes shit happen. She, like, takes care of stuff and she's so pragmatic. I like Samantha.
Yeah, I agree. I guess, you know, naturally watching it with someone against watching it with no one colors the way that you feel about certain characters. Because aside from Adam or Andy or Anthony Maraschino, we were seeing eye to eye pretty much the whole watch.
Yeah.
Here's my question about Samantha, if I can interject briefly. She's great. We love her. She's doing stuff, and that's good, and it's very needed in this film. How much leeway does that give her as a character? Because she really does put Miranda on blast, a woman who is, you know, suffering through a separation of her marriage. And she's like, hey, you know what? Tidy your fucking pubes up, my dude. That's her.
But I'm like, what do we expect from Samantha? She's not going to be honest with her friends. I mean, I think it's bad, but then also they all get even with her because they call her fat humongo for looking
they do.
The same.
I love the line that Carrie says, you would look gorgeous at any size. It is the most throwaway, like, please don't put us in articles and listicles and columns. You've got it. Just, like, leave us out of this.
Yeah, and then 1 minute later, she has some, like, shitty wordplay about her body. What was it? Like,
oh, what does your gut say?
Yeah, I was like, ugh, all right, bitch.
I guess we're doing this now.
This movie was made and existed before listicles, you know, were a thing. Like, I feel like in reference to Samantha calling out Miranda in that moment, I agree with Mitch that it's like, that's what we want from her. It's consistency in character.
Yeah.
But also, all of the characters display hearty, like, not callousness towards one another, but certainly self-centeredness to the point where it's like they don't really, the thing that unites them is they're all self-interested. Like, it's sort of expanding on what Amy said last time, but none of them care about each other truly.
I think Samantha does. Like, she does stuff for her friends. She's actually making moves. She's like, you take the friend away, I'll take care of all the wedding stuff.
Yeah,
she's like, she, like, shows up.
Yeah. But that's like, that would qualify her occasionally lashing out at the others.
Right.
For any reason. Charlotte.
I like this concept of social capital, of like, how many good things can I do to justify being a fucking douchebag for about a week? Like, how much of my year do I need to dedicate being a good friend?
But Samantha's the only one that's actually doing good friend things. Mm. Like, but they're all terrible.
Mm.
Charlotte's presented as virtuous, but there's actually no action to back that up. It's just like, hey,
Charlotte is vapor.
She's goody. Explain. Please, kindly elaborate.
I can't do it kindly, but...
the queen of mean herself, Mitra J. Hari.
Yes, Guy called me the queen of mean when because I screamed when Jennifer Hudson went away. I said, oh, we're really going to miss her.
That's so weird because I've been calling you the queen of steam because I know you have such an affinity for hot water.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true too.
Thank you for the laugh. I'm so hungover.
I kept a tally of the moment. I had at least 9 moments and I forgot to tally other times and I sort of fell off towards the end, but I had a tally of all the moments where I felt that Charlotte acted completely unhinged.
Great.
Where she would, like,
run me through.
And I wish I would have actually written down the moments, but it was really anything where she would, like, anytime she would scream when someone did something normal, it was like, you're crazy.
Could you challenge Guy and I to try and number them off? Because I reckon we could do it, the two of us.
I feel like Guy probably could because I made a huge deal about stuff. And he actually pointed out one that I thought was really funny that I didn't notice because I was writing. Because I was in the middle of one of my 30 meltdowns of this movie writing in all caps, how long is this? And Guy was like, actually, you need to look up because there's another kooky Charlotte.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I actually hadn't seen it before this week. But when they're all going to sit down in the front row at the fashion show, they're carrying various programs, but Charlotte, goofy fucking Charlotte, of course, has picked up a giant magazine the size of one of her legs that she's lugging around with the other stuff, and she's like going to sit down, and she puts down her coat, then she picks up her coat, and she's like she's just sorting through her papers. There is so much acting going on and faffing around with what's happening. If I was like, I've done stuff like that before in public where I grow self-conscious, I'm like, people must think I look fucking crazy. I can't figure out to do with what all the stuff I chose to carry.
But not our Charlotte.
Yeah, she doesn't give a hoot.
Oh, man, I'm in that situation so much, and I never like really felt bad about it, but now I'm going to. I've just got many objects. This is a real problem.
She's holding three papers. She's literally just holding three papers, and she's totally overwhelmed.
Imagine this woman on a computer, right? Could you imagine Charlotte on a laptop? Wouldn't work.
Also, the password is love. Oh my god.
I know it's set in 2008, but four characters is not enough.
They wouldn't even allow it.
They wouldn't. And no special characters? Come on. Sounds a lot like Sex in the City.
I like that.
It was a really good Queen of Mean moment when Jennifer Hudson's leaving and we're all heartbroken and she goes to give Carrie her key ring that says love. And Mitch and I have been talking a lot about how money, it's really interesting when they try and give money value in this movie because it's so valueless. Like it has no bearing on any of their lives at all.
It's a good way of putting it.
And Carrie's like, she's like, with all due respect, St. Louise, everything in this apartment is either $500 to take your fucking key ring and get out of here.
But I was like, it would be so funny if she just took the key ring and as soon as the door closed, Carrie threw it in the trash. Like chucks it overhand as hard as she can.
It'd just be nice to see more honesty in the film. Like that's how she feels. Because
she says something in that moment. I can't remember exactly what the phrasing is, but she's like, "This is she says, I got my love. This is for you." And every time I've wanted to be like, "That is a key ring, my dude. That ain't gonna do anything for anyone." And it's just too big to be practical. So come on now.
It had real value for Jennifer Hudson, though. Like, she'd hold it during the day, and it would give her self-love all day, every day.
It's like a talisman or another word that means talisman.
In a scene that is not featured in the movie, her marriage immediately crumbles and falls apart because she gave the key ring away to Carrie. And then the third movie, which is a Jennifer Hudson spinoff, is her going back to Carrie being like, "Hey, I actually need that key ring back." And Carrie frantically rifling through trash all around New York City to try and cover up the social faux pas of throwing away a gift.
Carrie just gives her an old metal detector.
There you go.
Like, good luck, bitch.
I quite like this. So what do you think happened to this key ring to imbue it with such strong magical powers? Like, what is the history of this piece of metal?
She probably just, like, found it on the ground while she was walking to New York from St. Louis.
She walked, okay. And, like, some mystical drifter left it there, but very intentionally for her to find. Like, it was preordained. And actually, the reason why she gets called St. Louis all the time, St. Louise, is because she does later become a saint. It's foreshadowing.
That makes sense.
That's beautiful foreshadowing.
Wait, also, Charlotte loves pudding. Awesome. That's crazy.
That's another of your notes.
But they, I wrote,
oh, the pudding
Charlotte
thing.
loves pudding, and is racist.
She's very racist.
Yeah.
She's, I don't know. Racist is probably quite a strong word, but she is hella ignorant. She can't handle being in Mexico, doesn't trust any of the food.
Her being like, I was so relieved that she like shit her pants.
Yeah, she deserves nothing less.
Justice.
Also, this is across both movies, which sadly, Mitra, you know, as it stands, is something you can't speak to. I'm sure you'll race home to stuff Sex and the City 2 down your pipes as soon as possible. But the treatment of waitstaff by the characters in this movie and the second movie is atrocious throughout. You know how they say it's the measure of a person?
Yes.
Mm. So when Miranda and Carrie are out for a meal, the one which Miranda confesses to you know, destroying the prospect of their marriage.
Well, they go to the string restaurant.
Yeah, they go to the famous balloon string restaurant. Like, I know that they're going through some stuff themselves, but they're so curt with the server or the waitress.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous. And
it's like, ha ha ha, they're cutting her off, ha ha.
And then, yeah, they do it with the Mexican hotel restaurant as well.
Yes.
Also, they overorder all the time for how much food they eat. Again, this is consistent through Sex and the Cities 1 and 2.
Wow.
The breakfast buffet, you know how they did it in Abu Dhabi, yeah. Tim? They do it again in Mexico. They've got like enough fruit for a family of 10 just sitting in front of them. Samantha even calls it out. She says, with all this fresh fruit there, you're just going to eat pudding? And then Charlotte says,
I want like, someone to keep eating pudding.
I want a no university other professor. Food. I want someone to really make the economic model for how this world works, this version of New York City. It's like, what's going on here? How's everyone afloat? This doesn't feel efficient at all.
And like, how many times does Carrie change apartments in this movie? She's always in a new apartment.
Yeah.
There's a lot of shifting around.
She starts in hers, and then she also stays at Big's, and then Big and her. I don't even know if Carrie puts in the money, because she can't have if she's, I don't know, maybe. There's a lot of real estate moving around, isn't
it? Oh, yeah, because she's paying for her fancy decorator with her advance money, so she's worried about something else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They measure money in decorators.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
That's when they try and introduce the concept of money, is when her and Charlotte are out shopping for furniture. Because she's like, I got the advance for my book, so I'm going to buy some nice...
Do you know what? That is so jarring, because it's like, what the fuck? Does money exist in this world? Do you have limited resources at some point? This completely contradicts everything I've seen so far. This doesn't make any sense. And then a desk is too much for you? You just fucking walked in with your hubby-to-be and bought presumably some $40 million apartment at the top of a building in New York City. You care not for desk money. You're fine.
They do the same thing. Miranda says that the taxi is 18 money. Carrie refers to the shoes as $550 of money. The cushion in her house is 300 money. It's all like, you know, it's a real problem for these characters. No one lives in this version of New York. I guess some people do. There are rich people here.
Yeah. Yeah. And just, yeah. I like how the guy in the cab just nods, but he doesn't get to have a line.
Yeah,
no, I want to know his story so badly as well, because it suggests that he's got a lot of stuff going on.
No, we've got to watch Awesome Mr. Big instead. Awesome, awesome, hot Mr. Big.
It's a knowing nod.
Do you give credence to Guy and my theory that Big is illiterate?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, anything to make this movie go by a little quicker.
Yeah, it is a fun thing to project onto him.
I love it. I mean, it gives him like some real stakes, because him like leaving, I just didn't get that. Like, there's no stakes in the movie. Also, they should have just fucking stayed in Mexico. Why not just stay in Mexico?
Yeah, they don't have any.
What do you mean for good?
For the movie, like, just have the rest of the movie be them like parading around Mexico, flirting and fucking.
Correct.
Like, that would be so fun.
They don't do any.
That's
fun.
It's a
stuff
fun movie.
Mexico.
We don't even get to see Samantha have sex with Dante. That's like the whole point of the movie.
El sex y el ciudad. Fuck, I've forgotten all my Spanish, man.
I've been
to Mexico Metro. I lied my way onto a school trip. Here's how it went down. I was in the sixth form, you see.
Tim's grown tired of talking about sex in the city. Tim, we're doing good work here, talking about the movie.
Relevant.
Okay.
I got bad grades, Mitra, and they were really poor grades, actually, in Spanish. I was no good as a pupil because I got a bad memory, you see, so I struggle with the vocab section of learning a language. Comprehension, I can get my head around. If there's rules, I can learn it. But if it's just loose vocab, I struggle.
I'm
so
the opposite.
Really? You're not a stickler for the rules, but very good at loose facts. Mm. I said to my Spanish teacher, I said Fifi. I called her Fifi. She hated it. Her name was Fiona, and we were supposed to call her Miss Atkinson. Probably shouldn't have named it. That's fine. So she was like, your grades aren't good. I was like, I know, but next year, man, let me in the subject, and I will be the hardest working student in the class. Like, you'll be shocked. This is going to be my number one priority. And by the time she figured out that I hadn't even taken it as a subject, I'd already paid for some of the trips, so they had to take me.
Oh, my God. I joined choir in my high school for 1 year so that I could go to New York.
That makes sense, though. Did you go to the choir practice that year?
I, like, took the class, but then I dropped out of the class
after the trip. Oh, yeah. Wah! Wah! That's what you sang in choir.
Can you sing, Medra?
Like, a little.
Medra can
sing for us now.
I'm like a bird on my way.
Oh, my gosh.
So? Actually, that song at the end of Sex and the City is Little Old Me.
That's right.
The Jennifer Hudson song is actually me.
Mitra sang all of Jennifer Hudson's smash singles from the soundtrack for Sex and the City.
Yeah, sorry, I'm actually modest, Tim.
You're welcome.
ever heard of modesty, Tim?
Yeah, Mr. Spanish class.
Look,
I'm a Leo. Don't blame me. It's my star sign.
I struggle to see how your little anecdote about squirming your way into a school trip to Mexico ties into the narrative of Sex in the City. But I'd like to continue to see you draw that line.
Because Mitra's suggestion that would be a really fun movie is absolutely bang on. Mexico is such a vibrant and interesting place. And they would be, then it's a fish out of water movie, which is what I want to see for the gals. Like, we've done the TV show. We've seen them in New York. We had
you see
five seasons
a fish
of
out of
whatever.
Water movie in Abu Dhabi. That's an hour and a half of some seriously drowning
fish.
Suffocating
fish. It's too much. They need a middle ground. They need a fish in the grass, which is Mexico.
Well, so long as we are talking about fish, this is something that I've been meaning to bring up for a few weeks here, but have failed to. Samantha's big romantic move on Valentine's Day for Smith Jarrett is to make sushi. And
Smith Jarrett.
You love that name.
Smith Jarrett and Andy Maraschino.
The name generator. Her big move is to make homemade sushi, which is, you know, which is quite a generous thing to do. But then to drape filleted raw fish all over her body. Can you think of a less sexy food in the bedroom?
Oh, that's going bad immediately. Let me tell you, as the husband of a doctor, that is not recommended. That's room temp.
As the husband of a doctor. Look, as the
patient
of a doctor.
They're on the West Coast. As the neighbor of a GP. Yeah. As someone who's in the neighborhood of three medical clinics, I can tell you that fish ain't going to last long.
Yeah, it was gross.
They're in Los Angeles. Too hot. Guys, there's a big section of notes here that if this is incredibly indulgent, but can I rattle them off at speed? Because I've got a point in supporting evidence.
Yes, of course.
Here's the thesis. Thank you. You're the only opinion that matters. My thesis is that this movie should end at 1 hour, 42 minutes, which is almost an entire hour earlier than what it does end.
Point one.
Well, I mean, so, it doesn't matter what you say. Everyone in the world agrees with this theory.
So here's what we're left with in terms of a movie if it ends at 1 hour, 42. One, heavy suggestion that St. Louis and Will are getting back together with the shot of them at the New Year's party. So that's kind of wrapped up. Two, Big consigns himself to being a lone forever and facing permanent consequences of burning Carrie one too many times. So we've got a lesson learned. Three, Miranda and Carrie are best friends, supporting each other through breakups with their shitty men who wronged them. A lesson there. And friendship, which is like the central thesis of Sex and the City. Four, Samantha shows how much she loves Smith by working really hard to keep their relationship on track, forsaking a life centered around herself and sex, vis-a-vis character development. Five, Charlotte is blissfully pregnant, happily married, and already the joyful mother to an adopted child. So that's wrapped up. That's fine. Six, the movie ends on New Year's, which is kind of perfect. New beginnings. That's when you want to end a movie. Seven, Carrie's journey is one of self-respect, but also of restraint. Like all heroes, we find her in comfort. She leaves to go on an adventure, getting married, then loses something big, Mr. Big, and then returns home changed. Thoughts?
Love it.
That is an incredibly comprehensive and almost like academically written assortment of points. And
I love it.
I mean, you had me at this movie should end roughly an hour before it ends.
But I love the moment of Carrie going through the snow to see Miranda. I thought it was so nice.
To me, I agree.
Like I want the movie to just be about their friendship. It's so disappointing when the courthouse wedding is like, who cares? Well, this
I know.
Sucks.
I'm going to say, especially who cares amongst the assembled other people going there to get married. Like there's a shot of them all sort of looking like, oh, well, I mean, ours was a bit boring, but these guys are really getting married, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, not as soon as you're married, you don't stick around in the fucking gallery to watch other people doing their, you know,
that's
getting
true.
Married.
But that is like not how you spend your wedding day.
10 other assembled couples.
Yeah, they're all like, well, we're married, but we won't be fucking today. Yeah, yeah. We're watching Carrie and Big tie the knot.
Yeah.
Another ugly, ugly outfit.
That was her original
choice
for wedding dress.
What do you think of that, the non-Vivian Westwood one?
Like, I just thought it was like her, it wasn't a compromise. It was the thing that he wanted.
Mm.
What I expected and what I think would have been cooler is if they were in the courthouse, but she was wearing her Vivian Westwood dress. That's what I thought was going to happen.
You're right.
What I wanted. And I thought it would be nice because it was like both of their things. Mm. But
it's a meeting. It's a meeting of the minds, isn't it?
But instead it's her being like, I'm Mrs. Big.
Yes, this is me now sacrificing everything. I haven't learned a thing. The thing that I thought about is what that phone call would have been between Big and the four girls. Wait, three, who aren't Carrie. Because they fucking hate him. We don't see any resolution to that. Yeah. Like, Charlotte wants him dead. She comes up with a whole saying just to meet him on the street.
Yeah, but he gets points. Ironically, it's the, you know, poisoned arrow that she has locked and loaded that turns her back onto Big because she gets so angry. Harry kind of explains it away after the childbirth. He's also very Jewish.
The whole point of that scene is just so we know that Harry is Jewish. She's like, his bubby, what a mensch, like all this shit. It's like, okay, we didn't, like, why are we doing this? And Guy informed me that there's a lot of real estate in the show of her making fun of him for being ugly, which I thought was fun.
Yeah, did you know that, Tim? One of our previous guests it's so good.
I remember some moments of that, yeah. Because everyone in the show.
Oh, I was trying to remember, like, they had three Jewish moments. They're like, yeah, you're going to schlep it all
over?
Carrie
says Mazel Tov.
Mazel Tov. And this
says
all happens
Bubby,
in like 2 minutes.
And it's a schmuck. He says he felt bad for the, is it?
It was schlep, Mazel Tov and Bubby all in a 2-minute scene when we like have not touched on it at all.
See, this is, as a New Zealander, we don't have a huge Jewish community here, so I don't have a good handle on this, and that never really like stuck out to me. Is that a lot to just throw, that's a lot of Yiddish to just pack into 30 seconds of the film?
When we haven't,
because I figured like, New York, there's lots of New York Jews there.
They don't have to talk about it, but I was like, why are we like, why are we getting all of this like weird information in this one moment?
Diversity reasons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, we have to like, we have to shoehorn Jennifer Hudson and then get rid of her as quickly as possible, not give the cab driver a line, and then make 8 Jewish references in a 1-minute period for no reason.
Also, we have to adopt a daughter from China.
Yes, 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 and bring her everywhere so they can be like, see, there actually was a diverse member of the gang.
And the fifth girl is a woman of color.
Sure, she doesn't speak, but she loves Cinderella.
That's
is the
character.
Fifth girl Lily?
Yeah.
In the sixth?
That's disturbing, isn't it? That's
New York City.
Whoa!
Now, so long as we're all here, I would like to play a segment that is as recent as 1 week old called Outside the Lines. With Mitra Johari. As well you observed, Mitra, there is a disgusting line in the middle of this fucking movie where they're comparatively talking about how much sex they have, and then they're trying to needle the information out of Carrie, but she's not willing to give it. Instead, she says, but I will tell you this, when Big colors, he rarely stays inside the lines.
Or outside the lines. Right?
Outside the lines.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
To me, ass fucking. absolute. That's where I went. yeah.
He does it in the butt.
He does it in
It's
her
anal sex.
Butt.
We're all adults here, folks. Yeah. She's just talking about anal sex.
I also did actually laugh at the when Samantha just says come.
Yeah, I kept a running tally of Mitra's genuine laughs. Do you want to hear them, Tim?
I
yeah,
am.
Go on.
When the auctioneer describes Samantha as our colorful bidder.
That made me laugh.
When Candace Bergen offers up Carrie Vogue airbrushing for her 40-year-old photo shoot.
Vogue photographers, mm-hmm. Vogue fashion, Vogue airbrushing.
Yeah. Samantha saying come because there's no crayon equivalent. Carrie not knowing how to use an iPhone. How can you laugh at that? It's so lame.
I don't know.
Samantha having done the legwork to know that some of the fellas don't know how to screw you. You like that?
I am disappointed, dude. Mitra.
Samantha's big hat got a big laugh.
Oh, man. These are getting worse.
Well, I got sadder and sadder as the movie
and,
went.
And the last one, and I agree with this laugh week in, week out, was fur is murder.
Yeah, that's a great laugh line, actually. That's legit. Those two women, man, I want to see their story. I am utterly convinced they are from Vermont. They've busted from Vermont.
Yeah.
Which is a long bus ride.
I want to see them in the, like, Miss Maisel universe. That's my request.
I haven't seen Fucking Mrs. Hell. Maisel, but you're imagining them heckling?
Well, I've seen one episode of Miss Maisel, and I just want to see those chicks in a scene together in there.
I don't like all the negativity that has been on this episode, so let's bring some shining light in.
With pleasure. I've got one locked and loaded.
I want to hear it.
It's early. It's when they're out for a meal. We're with the Brady Hobbs family. And it's just after Steve very deftly, you know, softens Miranda's mood. She's quite tense because she's got a brief to work on after dinner. And they're about to go home. And he says, "You got a milk mustache." And she goes, "What? You just criticized
me." Excuse me, guy. Can you please do the Steve voice if you're going to be Steve?
Yeah, that was very disrespectful. You got a milk mustache. And then she sort of goes, "All you do is criticize me." And he goes, "No, what, you want to go around not knowing you got a milk on your face or something like that?
Milk on your lip?"
Yeah, always talking about milk. Loves milk, that boy. Makes him big and strong. But she says, "Oh, whatever." Then he does the milk mustache back. And my shining light was Cynthia Nixon as Miranda. When she breaks at seeing that, when her mood lightens and she suddenly smiles and is like, "I love this guy. This is great." It was a beautiful piece of acting, very well realized, sort of like a romantic highlight of the film for me today. So
I agree. It really was the first moment where I was like, I love this couple. I'm rooting for them.
Yeah.
She's busy, but she's stressed out, but he makes her laugh.
It's nice, isn't it?
Yep.
It's a really nice
sentiment. He makes her remember something nice.
Did it manage to stick with you till the end, Mitra?
I don't know. I mean, I think they're still like the best couple. Like they're the couple that I'm rooting for. Other than obviously Dante and Samantha, I guess it's sort of like that horror movie thing where like they close the door. So like we know that Samantha and Dante are going to have sex, but whatever we imagine is better than what they could have done for us. Also, the Miranda Steve post forgiveness sex scene is like shocking.
Why shocking? Because it you see full like, frontal nudity.
It was just so like, whoa, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, we have seen, I mean, this movie's been so chill. Also, because I thought their t-shirt sex scene was hot too.
What? You thought that was hot?
I don't know. I guess it was just like, this is real.
Yeah, it's all relative for you, Tim. Of course, you know, in your porn-addled mind of knowing full well we're going to get a full frontal sex scene later in the movie, the t-shirt stuff pales in comparison. But, you know, if you go...
This talked down to in some time, Guy Montgomery.
It's only in reference to watching the movie. I have no idea how much pornography you watch outside of
Sex
and the
City. Well, as you know, 18 hours a day, I get up in the morning, I make myself a cup of coffee, I get the Vaseline out and fire up the router, chuck a VPN on, and then just go to town for 18 hours. And
why do you put a VPN on?
Well, you can see,
I don't bounce it around
stuff maybe.
Yeah, it's in case I want to torrent some movies so that they can't get me on copyright infringement. I mean copyright flouting.
It's not what you mean. Download porno movies.
You're torrenting porno movies.
You're not torrenting just regular blockbusters while you oil up.
No, guy, I've got a very busy day of consuming, what's the math on this? 16 hours. Wait, no, 18
hours.
For 18 hours of pornography a day. It is, but I've become something of a connoisseur. Ask me anything. AMA, I watch 18 hours of porn every day.
How many times do you come in 18 hours?
Precisely thrice. And I time it
Jesus fucking Christ.
Wow, what self-control.
Once every 6 hours, I'm like
those
sting
must be
that way.
Some, yeah, truly tantric orgasms.
You wouldn't believe it.
It is to talk about your masturbation habits, Tim. Do you have a shining light for us this week?
Probably a little movie that I found from South Korea featuring, get this, two women, a watermelon, and a pizza boy who forgets to bring the wireless credit card terminal thing. So they've got to pay for the pizza some other way.
Do they trade it for a watermelon?
Yeah, we do, man.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty racy flip, man.
It's a barter system, but then they're so stoked that they figured out how to solve the problem. They fuck in celebration.
That is such a good porno, is to completely remove the value of that transaction, and then it's just a regular sex scene.
Then it's celebration. See, this is the kind of porn I like, where everyone's just having a good time. There's no hint of
no
it being kind of like
it.
A...
Yeah. No one owes anyone anything.
Exactly. It's not a
no,
debt
like,
being
do you
repaid.
Take Venmo?
No. Like, it's just hey, we had a problem. We solved it. Let's fuck to celebrate.
The last scene is him walking out the way. Oh, I will Venmo you the money for the pizza. And he's back to work where he gets fired,
Sex should be the new champagne. Don't you think? What? Like instead of people being like, When you have a big success in your life, instead of being like, we should have alcohol, which is, you know, bad for your health and an addictive substance, should be like, hey, someone should fuck this guy. I guess I've stumbled across the little first hurdle on this. There's another party involved.
It sounds like something that you want to happen.
If you could just free up, you know, six of those 18 hours you've allotted for masturbation, Tim, you could roam around the world fucking anyone as soon as good news breaks for them.
I don't like the word roam in that sentence for some reason. It suggests nefariousness.
No. I say nefarious. But, you know, in a lot of ways we're different. Meech, what was your shining light?
I'd say that hat. I love that hat.
The big
moment.
Hat.
The big hat when she moves the hat around. I'd say kind of the only like slapsticky moment is just the hat going around so she can see the guy, Dante.
It is it
for
is
me,
fun.
It's hat and also there's all Samantha moments when she just straight up says come. I really did laugh for a long time.
Let's just like describe this hat for a moment. It's very big and it's very floppy. Those are
its
two main features.
It's a big floppy hat, yeah. And when you get a big floppy hat in there, you know I'm gonna laugh.
You know someone from wardrobe fought hard for that.
How many inches would you estimate that brim comes out over her face?
Oh, I'd say 80 to 1,000.
The wardrobe department, honestly, because I feel like maybe SJP had autonomy over wardrobe decisions, and wardrobe were like, "You're killing us here. We're going to look really shit if this is how the movie goes out." They fought so hard to get that hat. It was like their one thing that they could stand behind in terms of costuming for this film.
Particularly with women, I think, because guys are kind of often dressed quite schlubby and it doesn't mean as much to them. But hats for women, I think, is a real indicator of confidence as a symbol. Like Rose Matafeo has that great bit about that she would love to someday be the kind of girl who can just wear a hat and get away with it. Because the only difference between the women who can wear hats and the women who can't is it's a fucking confidence game, you know? And I think that's what that's all about. They're like, what is Samantha? She's fucking forward, man. Let's give her the biggest, floppiest hat anyone's ever seen.
Nothing if not confident. Do you have a movie shining light, Tim, or are you still distracted by the memories of that watermelon pizza porno?
Guy, I'm pretty sure that I heard a flute in that final song by Jennifer Hudson that plays when the credits roll.
Oh, wow. I guess this has to be the saddest part, right? Try to think of something nice every time.
Well, we've exhausted, you know, 16 already. Whatever, up to 17
has
maybe.
Has happened one yet?
Has the hat. No, the hat. The hat.
I like how you said that. Hat is a character. It goes Samantha, Charlotte, Carrie, Big, Miranda, Hat, Lily, Rose, Harry.
New York City.
Hat. Oh, my God. Mitra, can you, like, tell me a bedtime story about Hat? Like, a day in the life of Hat.
So, Hat wakes up every morning at 6 a.m., of course, to see the sunshine. Take a moment to herself before. She has a long day of work on Miranda's head. And then Samantha's head. Now Hat trudges on over to Dante's house for the daily slam.
The daily slam. You got a genuine spit
shot.
Take from me. I had some of my coffee. That was funny.
And then, what the problem with the Daily Slam is that it's usually outdoors. It's messy, but Samantha don't have time to clean off hats. So hats stained.
Oh no!
If you know what I mean.
This is a sad story.
Then Hat kind of bakes in the sun for a while.
Oh, no, poor Hat.
After the morning slam, and. I know, melanoma, it turns out.
The hat gets melanoma?
Hat has a melanoma.
Hats get melanoma?
This hat?
Oh, no.
So Hat gets sick, but Samantha doesn't notice until it's too late. So by the time Hat goes to doctor, Tim's wife.
Into a new character.
It's too late. It's too late for Hat.
Oh, no.
I know.
This brittle, cum-dried melanoma hat.
So there's the option, you know, to pursue treatment, but it's really too late. And so Hat just decides, you know, rather than treatment, let's just go out to sea. So there's a beautiful moment where Samantha tosses Hat out to sea and Hat gets ate it up by a whale.
And the whale becomes pregnant with Dante's child.
Yes, which is so cool. So the child actually is mermaid.
But the bottom half is just a giant dick.
And that mermaid is Nicole Kidman's character from Aquaman. So what do you think?
It's pretty good. There's a lot of crossover, including with the DC Cinematic Universe and Tim's real life.
Yeah, I mean, you ask for a story. I'll go give you a story.
I love it. What do you think, Tim?
I'm very excited by it. I love it. I actually, I might take some time off of the 18 hours of porn watching to start scripting this thing out. See if we can flesh this thing out to
get
a full
off the
movie.
Ground. I'd love to, while we've got time, do the hot new segment involving Steve called I Don't Want to Bother You People.
Oh my God. And Tim, I've heard you love this.
Did he give you the full backstory that, why we have to do it?
He only told me that you don't like it.
Guy said, I've got an idea for a segment, and I think at the time I was feeling so bad about being quite negative about Guy's offer. So I was like, Guy, whatever this is, we're going to do it. Not only this episode, but this will be a feature on every subsequent episode of this season. And then he said what the premise of the segment was, and I fucking hate it. It's so lame. But we're here now, and as a stickler for the rules, you know, we're here. We're doing it.
All right.
So for context, everyone, Big arrives at the outside the restaurant in a cab after the rehearsal dinner. Big is outside smoking cigars with Samantha, Harry, and Smith. And Steve shows up and he says, I don't want to bother you people. But my suspicion is he secretly does. He wants to cause a scene. So Mitch, you have to tell us, in what way does Steve do this?
Well, Steve just learned how to make a paper crane. And it's a lot easier than he thought. He thought origami was going to be harder to pick up and embarrassing and stuff. So he's actually made 1,000 paper cranes, like the classic children's story, Sadako and the 1,000 Paper Cranes, where she tries to make 1,000 paper cranes because she's got Hiroshima cancer and she doesn't make it. She doesn't do the 1,000 paper cranes. So he figured out exactly how many cranes she made, and he did the remaining amount of cranes as a symbolic gesture, which is going to be an annual tradition for him to bring health to his family. Yeah, so it's pretty beautiful, but he didn't get a chance to do it because it's Big's night.
Is this like how he atones for the indiscretion that he has brought to his relationship?
Well, it's just sort of a gesture. He's being like, look, I'm thinking about the future. I'm thinking about our family. I'm going to keep us from getting sick by making 342 cranes once a year.
Believe in me. So wait, when you say it's Big's night, what do you mean?
It's his night. It's his pre-wedding night.
So Steve's not allowed to show anyone his cranes.
So he's like, well, if I show them, I have to show all the cranes, and I have to go 1, 2.
I've got a couple questions on this, Mitch. Number one, is he gonna make the paper cranes there on site, or are they in the cab?
No, they're in the cab, but he saved the one for last because he wants Miranda to see him make it.
So he's made 344 cranes.
Yeah.
And he's got one fresh origami piece of paper in his back pocket.
Yeah. And it's already cut into a square and everything. And it's good.
So, but then the cab leaves, presumably with the 344 cranes.
So that's what's so sad.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So in the background for the rest of the movie, Steve's running around New York. Have you seen my cranes?
Yeah.
I'm going to get my wife back if I could just find my cranes.
If I could just find my fucking cranes. Yeah.
I love this. I love everything about it.
In between having sex with every other character in the film, the sex-obsessed Steve.
Sex-addicted Steve.
Yeah. He's a sexy guy. Of the characters in the film, who do you find the most attractive?
And well, I mean, don't say Samantha's dog, because that's Becky Lucas territory.
That's tough. I think Steve's pretty fuckable, but I think it's because, like, I don't know. Like, the t-shirt sex scene.
It's really
works
stayed
for me.
With you, yeah.
I think it's just because it's like, yeah, we're going to take our shirt off.
Yeah. Also, we know that they haven't had sex in 6 months in that scene. So yeah. You feel like as soon as it was happening, though, we're both probably like, we're just going to go
let's
with
just
this.
Do it.
Yeah.
Why are we wasting time? Let's just do Penny.
Let's get it over with, you might say.
Yeah.
Because that's what Miranda says. I know this movie so well.
You sure do, Tim. Do you have anything else to add, Mr. Bat?
Nothing.
Mitra, any other
I am
loose
like a
thoughts?
Husked corn, husked by Carrie Bradshaw.
At the hand of Carrie.
I also wrote during that scene when they decide to get married and she's husking corn that there are no smiles.
Yeah.
They're not happy.
What?
There are no smiles.
There are no smiles.
What, you're deciding to get married? You don't smile?
Very practical. I actually noticed this week when we first see Big and Carrie together, when they're checking out the apartment, they hold, this is some, it was just banging around my head. I'd never noticed the way they hold hands before. It's a classic body language thing. They hold hands like meat on meat or like palm on palm.
They hold hands weird.
Not like interlocked fingers, because isn't that when you're intimate with someone, you go interlocked fingers?
Yeah.
And when you feel like distant, you go meat on, I got to stop calling it that.
Meat on meat.
Palm on palm. It's the meatier part of the hand.
That sucks. let's see. Oh, I wrote that 55 minutes into the movie is where I lost hope. I don't remember what that was, but it is where I lost hope. So don't worry, there were only 68 more hours of movie after that. And I wrote Chris Noth equals corpse. So that is and I wrote good scene on New Year's Eve. So that was something nice.
You did like that scene.
I liked when she came to the house. I was like, that's sweet. Friendship conquers all.
I think the only other note, and this is parroting something Becky said a few episodes ago, for your abridged 1 hour 42 minute version of Sex and the City, Tim, I think would be if that Miranda Carey conflict, if we got to see, because then you experience like the full, you know, the full reach of their friendship, where you see Miranda confess that she said this thing to Big, and you watch them fall out, and then they become friends again, all before New Year's, making that reunion scene that much more meaningful, and making it quite a nice endpoint for the film,
mm-hmm.
A hopeful point.
I agree. I think it would be beautiful.
So. I booted up the movie while you guys were talking. I wanted to find out what the 55 minute mark was.
Oh, amazing.
It's,
what is it?
It's, I have a freeze frame right now of Carrie Bradshaw jilted. So it must have been the, it's like just after it's happened when they're at Charlotte's house. Are they at Charlotte's house?
They're at Charlotte's house. Yeah, I think it was when you realized they were going to go to Mexico, because you said very despondently, they're going to go to Mexico.
yeah, I think it was when I, but I think it was just because I realized I didn't know how long the movie was until that moment, because Guy like hit the keyboard and I saw that it was 55 minutes in and there was still
a full
movie's worth of time.
Yeah. They take even longer to get to Abu Dhabi in Sex and the City 2. I think it's an hour and a half.
But are they just there for the movie?
They're there for longer, but it's worse.
I hate seeing them in New York, which I know is the point.
Speaking of duration, this episode's been a big meaty beast, but I think we should probably think about wrapping it up.
Yeah, I got nothing to say.
I'm glad I saw this.
Mainly because I'm sweating booze.
You're a real charmer, Tim. Lord knows you've got a big day of porn watching ahead of you.
You have a really positive 18 hours.
Thank you
so much, Maitre.
Yeah. Thank you for joining us.
Oh my God.
Would you like to say anything about where people can find you online?
I'm on Twitter. You can do at tweet, @RAJOUHARI, at Tweeter Jahari. Ha ha. Cool choice.
That's a big handle.
It'll be in the episode description. I'll put it out. So just click on the notes that are in the notes. Yeah. There'll be a link. And I cannot endorse Mitra's Twitter account enough. It is the funniest shit consistently. I fucking love it. I was actually like at one point, this was a little while ago, trying to like find out if there was an automated script where I could just retweet everything you put out. Because I was just retweeting everything. It's like, that one's dynamite. This one's gold. Love this take. This
Tim,
is great.
This is an aside, but you did what I thought was such a funny tweet recently. It was the one about the comedian to watch. Can you just do a reading of that for us?
This is really going to sort of date the podcast a little bit, because obviously we're releasing these after when we recorded them. But here it goes, folks. My 2019 comedian to watch, Louis C.K. Watch him because he masturbates while you're in the room.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I told that to my wife, Zoe, and she didn't love it, eh? She didn't think it was that funny. But thanks, Guy. I really appreciate you getting
man,
behind
you,
that tweet.
You got me real good. And on that note, let's call it an episode. We'll see you next time.
Oh, bye, Tim.
Thanks, Metro. Great to talk to you. Bye.
Thank you.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.